I really should be, organized here, and like last week talk about koshering, and this week talk about food products, but I realized it's a little bit mixed in and mixed up, because I realized a couple of things I wasn't clear about last week, and I just want to make sure I'm crystal clear. My goal here is to make things very clear and make things as easy as possible for everybody. That's my two goals, and if I'm not doing that, so just to tell me, and I'll try to do that better. I want to go over again, because a lot of people asked me after I said it, so I thought I just said that, but so let me just say again, how to kosher an oven before we begin talking about new things. Koshering an oven, let me give you a halachic rule, and it'll help us understand really everything. The way the Torah works, the Torah has a chiddush, which says, tam ki ikar. Everybody knows you're not allowed to eat chametz, you're not allowed to eat treif, you're not allowed to eat melzuz and places together. But what about if you're not eating, if you cook in an oven that was used for milchiks or for chametz, you're not eating chametz. So the reason why this is a problem is because of a concept in the Shas, which is a well-known concept called tam ki ikar. We learned it out from the Torah. Straight from the Chumash, tam ki ikar means
somehow gets in to the whatever it is you're cooking now. So tam, the taste, is ki ikar. It's as if there's actual food there. Ikar means actual food. It's like the main food is there. It would be if you're cooking a milchik a kugel during the year, and the oven is fleishik. And under certain circumstances, we know that the oven has fleishik tam in it. Tam is what we're talking about. Tam is the subject, really, of everything that has to do with koshering. So the tam of the fleishiks will ever so slightly get into the milchiks. And by the way, even in the secular world, where they don't know about tam ki ikar, the real chefs know that different ovens are good for different things, because they're seasoned in a certain way, and they get a certain taste, and they give over a certain flavor into it, even though it's subtle. That subtle flavor is called tam ki ikar. So therefore, if tam is ki ikar, if you would use a chametz oven on Pesach, simple as that, even though you're cooking completely kosher le-Pesach chicken or whatever it is that you're cooking, the taste of the chametz gets into the heat, through the transference of heat, gets into the new food, and tam ki ikar, you are now eating chametz chicken. In that rule of tam ki ikar, there's a din, which is a very important din, of called nosen tam lufgam. Nosen tam lufgam means that the tam that's going into the new food is lufgam. It's being poking. It's not
helping, it's making it worse.
In order for us to say tam ki ikar, follow me because this is important. In order for us to say tam ki ikar, which is in Talmudic language, means in order for us to say something is nosen tam, it's giving tam into it, it has to be a good tam. If it's a bad tam, a putrid tam, a rotten tam, a tam from yesterday, which is not good anymore, because if you would leave the chicken out for a day, it wouldn't be good chicken any longer. It starts to become farfoiled, and it doesn't have the same taste as it would. So that tam does nothing. So we have the idea of tam ki ikar, which tells us the halacha of nosen tam. And then we have the p'tur of that is no saint tam, lifgam. If the no saint tam is taking away from the taste instead of adding to the taste. So no saint tam, lifgam is not usr, it's mutter. No saint tam, lifgam. This goes for all year, this goes for Pesach, this goes all the time. That's why if once something is, if you're taking a fresh pot or a fresh oven, or a fresh silverware, or a fresh stirring ladle, whatever it might be, if it was fresh, I mean, it was just used that day, it has a gewaldige tam of chicken soup in it. So now that chicken soup is going into my milchige kugel. That's no same tam. If that stirring ladle has been laying around, even if you washed it, you didn't wash it, that's not the point. That whatever is in there after 24 hours, Chazal say, it no longer has a good tam, and therefore it's nisim tam lifgam. And it's on that, under certain circumstances, the Torah says is mutter, and the Rabbanon of the Gemara said is usher. So this is an important rule. Klal gadol in Hilchos Kashrus, particularly in Hilchos Pesach, is important to know that the tam ki ikar only applies by a fresh tam. So that's why, because of this principle that I just told you, that's why we don't kasher anything when it's fresh. Just in case you messed up, just in case you missed something. It's too dangerous that to say that I'm going to use a fleishik tam for a milchik soup because I poured some hot water on it. Maybe it didn't take out all the time. Maybe you didn't kasher it correctly. So what we do is we always wait before you kasher something. We always wait 24 hours. And the waiting 24 hours, the purpose of waiting 24 hours is any of the tam which is balua into that keli now becomes pagam, and it's nosin tam lufgam. The Rabbanon said the nosin tam lufgam is still aser. Particularly on Pesach, they said, so aser, nosin tam lufgam, that you have to throw away the food. That's how aser it is. But it's still only Rabbanon. And since it's Rabbanon, they said you can kasher. So what we do, klal gadol b'din, is we only kasher something which is nosin tam lufgam. I hope I'm helping and not confusing everybody, because from the look of it, I'm confusing. But it's just a simple halachic principle that what we want to deal with in kashering all the time is tam pagul, because then you're already working in a drabbanon, you're not working in a deraisa. Does everyone understand this? Yeah.
Quick question: the waiting 24 hours after, does that also apply to a stovetop, or is that
applies to anything? Just about anything. It's a good question, actually. Let me answer your question in a minute. Yeah.
Are we talking about kashering for chometz or kashering?
Anytime.
Or kashering that a fleishik pot could be used yesterday, last week, and now I'm using the same pot for milk.
Or chometz to Pesach.
But for all year, that would be for fleishik to milk in the same pot.
You could theoretically, if you only had one set of pots. Theoretically, we don't do this, of course, nobody does this. But if you had one set of pots all year, you could use the same set of pots for milchiks and fleishiks, providing you always have a space of 24 hours in between, and you kasher.
And you kasher.
You have to do two things. If you kasher it without the 24 hours, you've done nothing. Midrabah. And if you wait 24 hours without kashering, you've also done nothing. So you need two things. You need the 24 hours, and you need to kasher. I'm only explaining what's that 24 hours. Everyone always talks about 24 hours. So let's take the example, and let's get right to tachlis here. We're kashering now from chametz to Pesach. Kashering from chametz to Pesach, so let's take the oven. The first thing you need to do is wait 24 hours before we deal with kashering the oven. If you don't wait 24 hours, you've got live, fresh chametz in your oven walls. So you have to wait 24 hours before you kasher. Does it make any difference? Let me just ask you a minute ago. Does it make any difference now if I do the kashering and then wait 24 hours, or wait 24 hours and then kasher? Or when do I clean it? Do I clean it at the beginning of the 24 hours? Do I clean it at the end of the 24 hours? The answer is it really doesn't make any difference. Because you just need two things. You need to wait 24 hours, and you need to kasher. You can't kasher it unless it's clean. You can't kasher a dirty thing. That's the halacha. Because then there's going to be a chatzitza between. Just like you can't go to the mikveh if you have something on your hand. You can't kasher something if you have something on there. So the point is it has to be cleaned and you have to wait. It's two separate issues. And it doesn't. And the Seder is not ma'akev. You can do it this way, you can do it that way. It's a common misconception, confusion. I'm trying to take away the confusion. I can't remember. Am I supposed to wait 24 hours versus then clean it? Am I supposed to clean it and went to wait 24 hours? It doesn't make any difference. The first thing is you have to wait 24 hours. For instance, if you walk into a house and you know that nobody's used this oven for 2 years, so now it's the same thing as 24 hours, 2 years, it doesn't make any difference. So now you can kasher it. You could clean it and kasher it. You didn't have to clean it before. So it's just the point is you need two, there's two separate standards. And the reason why I say they're two separate things are for two separate reasons. One is to be pogame the tam which is in the oven, and the other is to get whatever's in there, even though it's a tam pagum, out.
You're all educated women, so I'm using the yeshivisha words that are there, but it's okay, right? I think we're probably all speak better Hebrew than I do. Yeah.
Question. If you're cooking meat for Shabbos and it's already kosher for Pesach, but you're not doing it for Pesach, is it still the 24 hours that you have to wait?
I'm not sure I understand the case. Like, so what happens? I'm cooking for Shabbos.
Right. For this Shabbos.
And it's Pesach.
Right. So that's a food, but you're not.
Right.
It's not for Pesach.
Then there's nothing to wait 24 hours from. In other words, it's all.
Yeah, no, but I'm
the chametz in it, the hot chametz was more than 24 hours ago.
Right. So what I'm saying is, could you kosher it Saturday night, or does it have to be Sunday?
If you didn't put chametz in it,
yeah,
you can kosher it Saturday night.
Huh.
The other thing is like, but it's dangerous because you've got a lot of chametz around. It's a dangerous thing to do. I mean, in theory, yes, you could do it, but it's not a good idea. It's not best practice, because the best practice is get rid of all the chametz and get everything put away. So that's the we want to kosher our oven. So the way we're doing this is, A, we're making sure that it wasn't used for 24 hours for anything hot. Meaning, a refrigerator, you don't have to wait 24 hours to kosher whatever it means to kosher a refrigerator. Sink is a good example. Sink, if you have a sink and you want to kosher, which is very kosherable, a stainless steel sink is very kosherable, you can use it the whole 24 hours, but you can't use it for hot. So what you do, you have to be careful not to run your hot water, or certainly not to pour pasta, you know, on it or something like that, for 24 hours. If you use it for cold, nothing happens. Why? Because it's simple. Because if something cold doesn't get into the kishkas of the sink. So what's the difference if you, it's like putting a dry thing down. Cold things, in order for anything to transfer from into a pot, out of a pot, into a sink, out of a sink, has to be hot, it has to be wet. By the way, like, this sentence is the biggest rule of all laws of kashrus. Hot and wet. And nothing transfers unless it's hot and wet. And in very, very few cases, spicy. That's another case, which was not important for now. That's the only way, normally speaking, if you're not talking about onions and garlics and things like that, the only way things transfer is hot and wet. If it's just hot, it doesn't transfer. If it's just wet, it doesn't transfer. It has to be hot and wet. So what does that mean in simple language? It means that if you want to kosher your sink for Pesach, let's say you want to turn over your kitchen on Sunday, so probably Saturday night, this Saturday night, let's say, as an example, let's say this Shabbos you're eating out chametz dishes, let's say, and now you want to wash your dishes Saturday night, so you're washing your dishes with hot water, hot enough that you could, I don't know, my house, even the good Shabbos, you could burn yourself on the water, it's hot enough, God so let us go, I think, and now it's a chametz stick of sink. So I cannot make that, I can't start using it for Pesach on Sunday morning. Now I have to wait from Saturday night till Sunday night, a 24-hour cycle, so that anything that's in that sink is public. So what am I doing with my oven? Let me get through the oven here. Based on this principle, and I'm hoping the principle will help that understand things even that we're not going to talk about, what it means with my oven is that I need to wait 24 hours. This is a good week, because let's say Shabbos is chametz, and then probably next week you're going to start thinking Pesach, right? So Shabbos is chametz, you leave your oven for 24 hours, sometimes in there, before that, after that, doesn't make any difference. You want to clean it. Cleaning it, as I explained last week, is because you can't kosher something which is not clean. You can't kosher something which is rusty. You can't kosher something that has scotch tape on it. It has to be naked oven. That's what it has to be. And the way that you accomplish that is by just scrubbing and scrubbing and scrubbing it. That's the simple way, or the not-so-simple way. And it has to be clean enough, as I said last week, clean to the touch, that you can rub your hand along the wall of it when it's cold. You run your hand along the wall of it, and you don't feel dirt. It doesn't make a difference, really, what you see. It makes a difference what you feel. And if you feel something there, whether it's shamnonit or whether it's chametz or whatever it might be, it means that it's not clean enough to kosher. That can be done within the 24-hour period, providing you don't make it hot to clean it. Now, I don't know, like, I don't think I've ever actually cleaned an oven, but I think there's a difference in the United States and Israel and how you use the spritz. I think it'd be easy off in America, you use it hot. The stuff here, you use cold. It's a different type of of a system, a different type of an acid. But if it's going to be hot, then you can't do it. Then you should do it before. Clear?
Do
it at the beginning of the 24-hour period.
So you clean it, then you heat it.
Would be the smartest thing, if you need to heat it up. But let's say you're cleaning it cold. So you're cleaning it cold. So you wait the 24 hours, and now it's clean. We have the two things that are fulfilled. The two duties are fulfilled. Now it's still not kashered. What does kashered be? Now you're taking any tam that's left within the walls of the oven, and you want to get rid of it. You want to get it out of there. How do you do that? So kibolo kachpolto, another halachic principle. The same way you got it, that's the same way it's going to get out. So we got it through 375 degrees Fahrenheit, or whatever, 120 degrees centigrade. The chametz got in there. That's how you're going to have to get it out. So what you need to do, very simply, with a clean 24-hour-old oven, it's very simple. You just turn on the oven to the highest temperature that you would ever cook at, and keep it on for usually the longest time that you would ever cook something, which is maybe, 2 hours or something like that, and you keep it on for 2 hours, and it's kosher. That's kosher. Chumrah, I have a chumrah here, and that is that there's a lot of different ways that the chametz got into the oven. It doesn't only get in through heat. Sometimes it gets in through steam. So if it got in through steam, so now we have to take the steam out. So what do we do about that? Here's the chumrah. Besides for doing everything that I just said, you take a pot of water or a tin can of water or paper, something of water, and you put it in the oven and let the whole oven then fill, while you're turning it on, and then the whole oven fills up with steam. So now you've done you've accomplished another thing. This is a chumrah. And not only have I taken it out, kiboilo kachpolte through heat, but just in case the chametz got into the walls of the oven through steam, so now I'm taking it out through steam. Is there any other way that food can get into an oven? If there was, you would have to do something else, but there is no other way. That's the way you kasher an oven. I think pretty clear. If you have, there's another way to kasher an oven, and that is you can burn it out. That's called libun gamar. It would mean you take a big blowtorch and you hit every inch of the oven, and you get it out that way. There, you're not getting it out of the walls, you're actually destroying it. That's a different thing. Libun gamar, you're actually destroying it. Destroying it, by the way, you don't even have to wait 24 hours.
You do?
No, you don't. If you're going to destroy the chametz, you can do it ala makom. That's why if they go into hotels or things like that, you know, and they don't have the ability to wait 24 hours for everything. I know this is very common in factories. Because the factory's not going to hang around. If they're making a treif batch or a chavetz batch, and now you're coming in, the big mashgiach is coming in who wants it to be a Pesach batch, they're not letting everything sit for 24 hours. This is not happening. You know, they would lose $1 million if they let everything. So what happens there is they use a libun gamar. Libun gamar means they actually burn out. We come with these big industrial blowtorches. Did you figure out the word for a blowtorch?
Yeah, I think.
Somebody said, right? Right, the blowtorch.
Halchama is to weld.
Like that kind of a thing.
Right,
so it's a welding torch.
Right.
Yeah, nothing. So.
Also, I haven't seen them here. Self-cleaning.
Oh, yeah. So now, it's very interesting. You're like right with me. So now, a self-cleaning oven is a self-koshering oven because it reaches up to, it reaches usually a self-cleaning oven, I'm talking in Fahrenheit because I was brought up that way, but it reaches 900 degrees Fahrenheit, 900 degrees. Your oven only reaches 400 degrees. But if it's on self-cleaning mode, it's 900 degrees. Destroys everything in there. If there would be anything that would be in there would be destroyed.
But isn't there a residue of what?
Doesn't make a difference. That's not.
No, but that also you have to.
You don't have to do anything. It's nothing. It's dust. Afka. It's nothing. So if you're doing that, if you're lucky enough to have a self-cleaning oven, and it's truly a self-cleaning oven, you don't have to clean it because self-cleaning is self-kashering. You don't have to wait 24 hours, and you don't have to easy off. You don't have to do it. Oh, because there's. Why do I say truly? Because there is. Here in Israel, there are things that they call self-cleaning, and they're not exactly self-cleaning.
Really?
Yes. And the way you know if something's really a self-cleaning, I think they call it in America continuous cleaning. It's not exactly self-cleaning. It doesn't get up to 900 degrees. The way you know if you have a self-cleaning oven for real is that I think that there's like a latch that you have, safety latch that you have to
close it. Do you have that on your oven?
Or
it gets closed out of that. Okay, so that'd be newer technology. But if you could open it in the middle and look, this is not a self-cleaning oven. It might get hot. All ovens get hot, but it's not a self-cleaning oven. So, but self-cleaning is self-pasturing, and it's like using a blowtorch. It's better than using a blowtorch because it's very even heat that goes throughout. So you don't need the pot of water. You don't need to clean it. You don't need to wait 24 hours. It's like you took a big welding torch and you went through the whole thing. That's what it is when you have a self-cleaning oven. It's a really good thing, and it's kosher. So we're good with the oven. A convection oven, same thing, no difference. Convection oven is no difference, except that there's a fan there. So the fan, I don't know how that works. I don't know if the heat all gets into that fan and it doesn't break it. So I think the right thing to do, I just don't know how hot it gets in the fan, and I know that there is oils and grease and things in the fan, so that you spritz with something. So by spritzing it with, what's it called here, St. Lawrence? St. Maurice? St. something, some priest. you by spritzing it, then you've again, but you were poking the tamavin, that's not royal achilles kelov, and it's not such a problem anyway. So that would be a good way to, you know, to spritz into the fan if you can. So that's how you kosher an oven. Koshering a microwave, as I explained last week, is not as complicated because the microwave does not get so hot. It doesn't get hot. You could touch the walls of the microwave right after you cook with it. So all you have to do with a microwave is simply clean it for Pesach, make sure everything is clean, take a paper cup full of water, put it, preferably hot water, put it to the microwave, turn it on for 15 minutes. The water will be boiling.
No, put salt in the water.
Nothing. No. You just put water in there, and it's done. And then if you have a glass tray that comes out, that might be different. So you should cover that with plastic wrap, saran wrap. In every country they call it something else, but you don't have a cling wrap. That's how you do that. A stovetop is also self-kashery if you do it this way. By if you would take a piece of blech, I explained, and put it on top of the four burners, assuming you have regular like gas, fire coming out and everything, and you put a piece of tin on top of it and turn on all four burners for 10 minutes, it probably gets to over 1,000 degrees in there. Can't say. I measured it, but I heard it. So anything that's under that blech is kosher, period. It's just kosher, that's all. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to do anything else. That's all you have to do.
Okay,
that's so like going at it with a blowtorch completely.
Okay.
And you'll do once what I did and take the tin and put it over. We have knobs on the side. Put it over the knobs also, so the knobs will disappear. It gets so hot they will just simply melt.
So don't
put it over the knobs. Right. Anything you didn't cover with the tin, then you have to cover or kosher it some other way. While on the subject of a stove, if you're lucky enough to have a fan on top of the stove, like an exhaust fan, that's a real chametz hazard. And I'll tell you something else, I think it's a real treif hazard. Because that takes in all the chametz, and when it gets hot, something is coming out. I'm not saying there's food dripping into your food, but again, the zeya, the steam, goes up and the steam comes down. So you've got chametz coming, you've got milchus coming, you've got fleishus coming. I don't think you should even have such a thing. That's the truth. But if you do have one, so then you have to either cover it for Pesach, for sure for Pesach, cover it, or get completely new pieces over there. For the, you know, different filters and different fan covers and everything else.
So enamel,
it will get ruined if you use my system. So then don't do that. Don't do it with the tin, just cover it with aluminum foil because there is no real way to cover enamel. Also, enamel sinks, there's no way to kosher them. So the only thing you would do with an enamel sink is just clean it and put an insert in. There's nothing else to do. You can't kosher enamel because enamel is like kli cher. Somebody brought over to my house today. Does anybody have one of these? If you don't, I guess I won't bother talking about it. But an air fryer is like really cool. So
it's like a tablespoon of oil.
Yeah, it's a deep fryer, like a deep fryer with no oil. So it's like a mini convection oven. And it's very interesting. So you put, let's say, French fries, chips, put them in there. You put a tablespoon of oil all around it. It gets as hot. The air circulates. It's like a little thing, right? So the air circulates in there, and it gets so hot that it actually turns into golden brown chips. It's an amazing thing. And it tastes like it through the theory of, was it malaise or something like that, that you want to cook things in order to taste good. You want it to be more cooked on the outside than on the inside, which is why everybody fries everything. So I think it's called the malaise theory, I think. So it does that too. It even does that also. But it uses, now, as he showed it to me, how do you kosher such a thing? So you're not going to put a blowtorch on there. It's not an oven, because it's like a frying pan where you put a tablespoon of oil. There's no real way to kosher. So I don't think there is a way to kosher. You would have to keep it on for like an hour at least 400 degrees, which you can't do. It's made to use for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. That's what it's made to use, because it's a very hot thing. So I don't think you get less, but it's a good thing to buy for a Pesach. Yes, I can tell you exactly. I'll give you my website. Yeah.
What about like the granite countertops? You said, like, for example, there can't be like any gloomy or anything like that on the outside of it. But what are granite countertops that it has like the caulking around?
What did I say about gloomy? I don't say anything.
Like
so, like this. That I said that you can't kosher earthenware. You can't kosher plastic, which would be formica, on Pesach. And the Caesar stone, which many people have, like that's the stone that the Kablam gives you automatically, you can't kosher because that's a composite of different stones and plastic, if you really have granite. So you don't have to worry about those little strips, because the little strips is buckle with anything. So all you have to do is pour boiling hot water. And anyways, granite doesn't have it goes straight up to each other. That's one of the ways you know that you have real granite, is that it actually butts up one thing to the other. So there's no problem. The best thing for Pesach is if you have a granite kosher looking chili, just like if this would be granite, you just take boiling hot water and pour it on top of it, and that's all you have to do. If you have an urn, give me one second. If you have an urn, so a lot of people are asking. So an urn doesn't have anything to do with chametz unless you clean it with chametz stick vinegar, which most vinegar is, unless it's kosher l'Pesach, it's chametz vinegar. So if you've ever cleaned it with chametz vinegar, so forget about it. Don't use it on Pesach. If you never cleaned it with chametz vinegar, you just use it for water. So then all you have to do, water is not chametz, and you don't wash it with hot water in your dishwasher. You don't do anything like that. So you just have to wash the outside, and you're fine. Same thing is true if you have a water machine. You just have to wash it. If it's cold water and it's hot water, I guess it would be a good chumra to take the tap, if you can, and just pour some hot water on it. If you have, more importantly, if you have, let's say, a Nespresso machine, again, it depends. There are about 90% of the capsules that are sold are kosher l'Pesach. So there's no real issue. However, once you start with flavored coffee or with decaf coffee, so that can make the whole thing chametz. So you have to know what you used it for. If you only used it for Pesach, so just a question of the outside. The outside has to be clean. You don't have to kosher. You just have to clean it. And you can't have chametz any more than you have to clean your couch or, you know, just the same thing. You just can't have chametz there. Just one second. Yeah.
When we talk about sage, and the sage can't be kosher,
but
you still need to kosher the spigot, correct?
The spigot, so you have a faucet. So the faucet, you pour boiling hot water over. If you have one of those things that come out, which is a nice feature, something that comes out, and so then you really could do it befroom, because then you can just turn it upside down in a way that it would spritz you in the face, let's say, and you take boiling hot water and you just pour it on top of it. Good to have here is like one of those kettles, you know, a kumkum that actually heats up water. It's like not many people don't have them anymore. But if you have a kumkum, you just pour it on top of it and it's kosher l'Pesach. The reason why you have to, just so we understand our principles, I don't want to lose the principles, the reason why you have to kosher the spigot or the faucet is because if you have a pot of pasta during the year, which is chametz gomer, and you put it into the sink, which I think many people do, and the steam goes up into the spigot, it made it chametz. So now you have to kosher. That's why you have to kosher.
So again, if you use a come
that you clean with from a vinegar to
come. Yeah, it doesn't make any difference as long as it's hot water. It doesn't make any difference.
But you just said you can't use the urn.
I said you can't use an urn?
You
no, I said you can't use it on Pesach. You can use it for kasha.
Can't you just boil it up and then throw a beam of the comets as well?
It's not so simple.
It's a metal urn, not a plastic.
We're talking about a big metal urn. It's not so simple to kasher for Pesach because it has the calcium deposits in it. It's really not so simple. It's hard to make those things like new. Even if you cleaned it with hot vinegar, it doesn't get that
even
good.
Even if you haven't cleaned it with anything, but wiped it out.
That's fine.
Wash it out. No,
so it's fine. Wash it up. Wash it up. A lot of people are ask about dishwashers. I don't know any way, from what I've seen, I don't know any way to kasher a dishwasher. Even if it's a stainless steel dishwasher, it's full of, looks to me like plastic and rubber things inside of it. Usually the shelves are lined with the plastic. If you have one, some people are really want to have a dishwasher, so they buy actually special, shelves and racks. That's what it is, special racks for Pesach. Okay, if you're so inclined, that's expensive. It's like hundreds of shekels to do that, but it's probably easier to wash dishes. But if you want to do that, you can do that. But I don't know any way to take the dishwasher you have. Even somebody described to me on the phone, they didn't bring it, but they described to me on the phone that theirs is completely stainless steel. The racks are stainless steel. This is stainless steel. So I said, I understand with the little wheels that turn. There's a shelf, there's little wheels on the shelf. So that also stainless steel prisoner. So it's not all stainless steel and you can't cast it. So also, I understand that there's no way, if you have a soda stream machine, there's no way to make it clumps, except from the outside. In other words, everything that goes in there, you know what you put in your soda stream machine, but the anything that comes from soda stream that you it's all kosher l'Pesach all year round. I want to do something here, just to get out to do this.
The idea of putting a research into your oven, you know such people that do that?
I do know such people.
What is that? What does it do?
What it does some people have an oven that they build, and they put it into their oven as an insert, and that's what they do. I haven't seen anybody do that recently. When I was a kid, I saw that. But what that does is it accomplishes a new halachic principle, which I'll just tell you quickly because it's good to know. Remember I said before, in order for something to transfer, it has to be hot and wet. Big principle, hot and wet. There's a rule like this, yavesh b'yavesh, ein b'nehem roitev. Get it? Yavesh b'yavesh, ein b'nehem roitev. Nothing transfers. So interesting, to give you an interesting example of this, I'll put this in your mind, you'll remember forever. But I remember when we were in Buffalo, so the kosher caterer wasn't really kosher, but he was a caterer. He wanted to make something kosher, and so at an event, it was like an event, a federation event. So I said, it's all fine, kosher food, but you have tray plates. All the plates are tray. So he wasn't going to serve. I said, serve on paper plates. So there was no, especially at that time, there was no chad pami, which was nice enough to serve at a $500 a couple dinner. It wasn't the right thing. So came up with a solution to take a paper plate and to put like the kind that doesn't, like a plasticized paper plate that doesn't leak, and put it onto the trefa dish and serve it that way. What would be the halacha? Meaning like you have a machitza liner on the plate. So I said that it's yavesh be yavesh, because there's no wet that gets in between. She'ein b'nehem roitev, and it should be mutter. Or it's mutter. So I asked Rav Scheinberg, all over Shalom, is this okay for a Federation dinner to take this? We got plates, and we put them on top of the plates, so it has the firmness of the plates and the beauty of the plates, and the waiters are bringing out and everything. But really, they're eating on a paper plate. So he told me, absolutely not. So, but in principle, I'm right. They absolutely not. It's like you don't use tray plates, period. Like, you know, that's not the way to do it. But I was just thinking creatively. But from a halachic point of view, I'm 100% correct. Some things just don't do. Just don't do it. Let me give you these. This is important. Maybe just pass these back. Now this paper, I think this might be helpful and answer a lot of questions. This is a sheet. Both sides are different. There's a sheet of everything that does not need hashgacha for Pesach. We're after food. Everything does not need hashgacha for Pesach. The sheet that's in Hebrew. Just take a look at that side for a second. So this is a really good list. And this, by the way, the people that made this list, I didn't make this list. People who made this list, I tend to think they're way too machmir and everything. So, I mean, this list is very, very machmir list. There's no cool list here. But if you look, we don't have to go through it because you can read like I can read. But go to Old Pan. But if you look on the right, just give you a couple of highlights. If you look at the right side, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down. So you have, what is that? Who can read that? Starts with a dot, no, on top. One up. Deodorant. Deodorant. So it's English. Right, it's English. So what does it say right next to it to the right? Lo tzarich. You don't need lo tzarich in this case means you don't need any hechsher on the other. Use any deodorant. You don't have to start reading the bottle. You don't have to do anything. The reason for that is because there is no edible deodorant. Period. It's not Roy Lefkowitz Kelly. Go down one. I'm just giving a couple of highlights because it's English. Vaseline tahor. Pure Vaseline. Lo tzarich. Two down. Tes lamed kei. What's that? Tes lamed kuf. This is fun.
Talc.
Load sari.
Do you have to get new for Pesach?
No. Load sari. Just use whatever you want. Yeah, I mean, people think that talc is like a powder, so it might have chametz in it. Load sari. This is a very important list. Just take a look. Metaher avir. That's air freshener. Load sari. On the other hand, mei peh, which is mouthwash. Sari. Logical. Now that's a chumrah because many people will say that Listerine or something doesn't have anything in there which is edible. I want to say that just since you're putting it in your mouth, you have to. I can't tell you, by the way, I know what all these things mean. So lo tzarich kolomar, it says up on top. You see? Ain't tzarich behechsher miyuchad lepesach notzrim amechilin shemen navat tzrichim hechsher miyuchad lepesach. Meaning vitamin E. If it has vitamin E in it, so then it needs a hechsher. But under normal circumstances, it doesn't need any hechsher. Mapiot nahach niyar. That's a paper tablecloth. On here you'll find the baking sheets. What are they called? Paper that you put on your baking pan. Right? Does that need a hechsher for Pesach? Lo tzarich. Aluminum pans. All the things that people call me all day long and ask me, it's all here on this list. Some things you do need. Let's take a look at some of the things that you do need. Kalim chad pan mi miniyar or mikarton rotsui. Now I'm telling you that but it says it's a good idea. Rotsui, he says on top, definition is, if you can get it, im masigim bekalut im hechsher adif. That's what it says. But in the Badatz, Edech Haredus handbook, it says that all paper plates. From this year, it says all paper plates are kosher. There's no issue.
We had a rule of thumb, but I'm not sure that it was really applied. Anything that a dog will not eat.
Yeah, this we spoke about last week at Lent. Yeah, we did the dog test. This week I was going to bring the dog with.
So that's the general rule.
But you don't know what the dog's going to eat, the paper plate or, you know.
What about the
mouse would.
Just take a look. You can take a look here. Mice don't count. Mapiot niyar, rachech kvisa, that's a water softener, you know, like for laundry. Mishchod nalayim, shoe polish. Oh, go through it. You don't need to go through it. On the other side, you have an American list, which I gave you anyways, because most of it applies to this also. This is in the United States, and this is given out by the Star Kate, that's Rabbi Heinemann, it says 2017, but the reason it says 2017 is because I looked up the 2018 and said, see, 2017, no change. So things like aluminum foil products, disposable, all good. No difference here, no difference there. Baking soda, just plain baking soda, it's good. Cocoa is all good. It's all good. Coffee, so here it says Folgers, Nescafe, Taster's Choice, Trader Joe's. Over here, what you have is Taster's Choice or Elite or Jacobs. They're all kosher Pesach, unless it's decaffeinated. Decaffeinated goes through a process, apparently, where they put it through a alcohol to take the caffeine out of the coffee, and that would render it hummus. So you want to stay away from decaffeinated. As far as I know, it's probably the same thing as it was since I was a kid, that on Pesach you drink Senka or whatever. They have something here with Senka is not even coffee. Senka is like hickory or something. I don't know.
It says here, aluminum disposable. I see that on many, many aluminum foil dishes that you bake in, it's got a stamp of a hechsher.
So let me tell you something. Just because something has a hechsher, it doesn't mean that it needs a hechsher. And it's a very important principle. Things have a hechsher. People ask for a hechsher, so you make money and you have a hechsher. So it's wrong. It's wrong. Years ago, just to tell you a quick story, years ago, I was asked by a factory. You know, again, when we lived in upstate New York, so everything has to be good in New York where there's a lot of Jews. So even the Goyim want to have kosher supervision. So this guy called me and said that the New York distributor says that he can't distribute his factory stuff unless it has kosher supervision. Could I come in and supervise his kosher, which I did on the side to make money at that time. You know, so I said, well, what do you make? So he says sponges. So I said sponges. I thought it like sponge cake, I didn't know what he was talking about. No, sponges, like you wash the dishes. Is it made out of like sponge, comes from the ocean, like sponges? No, it's made out of polyester. So I said, so what do you need kosher? You don't need, there's nothing, is there anything else in it? Do you put soap in it, this and that? Nothing, just sponges. So I said, no, you don't need it. Well, can you give me one anyway, because the New York distributor will won't sell it. So I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I have integrity, and if it doesn't need kosher, I'm not going to take your money and give you kosher. Okay, so we hug up from him, and he wasn't very happy with me. I wouldn't give him, he didn't care, he doesn't want to make money. But I got a call maybe 2 weeks later from one of the big kosher supervising agencies. Can I go down and be their shaliach to go to a certain factory and give kosher supervision? I said, which one is the sponge factory? So I said, I refuse that. I could have, I should have. So, but we do it. We take it. So what I'm trying to say is that just because something, these aluminum pans and paper, they should not have any kashers on it. It shouldn't have. Because it just confuses everybody. It shouldn't have. But take a look here on dishwashing soap, which is very important.
I heard about this issue on Abraham Yosef talks. He said that the kosher symbol is, in case people want to reuse it, that it shouldn't have to go to the mikveh. You shouldn't have to toggle it. That's why it has a kosher symbol on it, because it's made
not,
in Israel.
Not kosher.
To show that it's made
why
in
don't you have to put it in the mikveh if it's brand new and now you're going to use it permanently?
No, if you want to use it a second time.
Even if you feel you have to toggle it, what does it help that it has a hechsher? If it was made in China.
It's not. The ones with the hechsher are made in Israel.
But it doesn't say that, right? Just says kosher. That's the problem. I mean, you might be right, but it doesn't say it.
Something made in Israel doesn't have to.
Anything's made by Jews doesn't have to title. That's what you're saying. But I don't know that a hechsher tells you it's not made in by Goy.
That's what that symbol means.
This dishwashing soap's interesting over here. Again, that's one of those things that have a hechsher. According to my understanding of the Badatze de Charedis book, it's all kosher. Every single one of them. There isn't one that's not kosher based. You want to get one of the hechsher, get one of the hechsher. But the fact is, they're all kosher l'pesach. I think if you look here on this thing, it tells you also the same thing on the other side. You look right here, you got the page look for the Hebrew. Frozen fruit, which is very interesting. So frozen fruit, so we buy frozen fruit. There's this lady who sells frozen fruit with her Reuben's hechsher. So she has special for Pesach, and it costs more. So I said to her today, I said, what's the difference between this fruit and that fruit? So she said, nothing. Costs more. That's the difference. So what it is there's an actual mashgiach there which makes sure that there's nothing there but fruit. In other words, they don't add corn syrup and they don't add anything else. So she said the fact is,
So you can do this with you on. I'm just telling you what the fact is that in that particular group, they don't add anything anyway. There she has, by the way, which is interesting, she has fruit with, does anybody know what I'm talking about?
So she also has Beit Yosef.
Oh, so she has Beit Yosef, which is Sephardi, and Reuben, which is Ashkenazi. Why? Because for the Sephardim, if they put corn syrup on it, it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Because for them, it's mutter. So that's why the Reuben is ash.
You can't buy her Beit Yosef.
Except that she says they don't put anything on it. Period.
So then it doesn't matter.
According to Rabbi Heinemann, all frozen fruit is unsweetened, additive-free, without syrup, citric acid, ascorbic acid, vitamin C, and do not have an issue with insect infestation, are mutter on Pesach. So really the issue is, I guess you can look for Asher, but if you get 100% real frozen fruit, then you don't have the issue. I want to say something about meat. Every single kosher chicken and kosher meat that's packaged in this country and in the United States, like Empire, things like that, it's all kosher levesa. There is no such thing as a chametz chicken. Meaning that, not saying that, like a person could be eating a sandwich inside, the shaykh could be eating a sandwich while shefting and it falls into the cavity of the chicken. It could be, but they don't allow it. In other words, they every single one of these factories in Batei Shechita are makbid, that there's nothing, no chametz, it's a Pesach to go all year round. There's no such thing as one that is, every single one. I've heard this from a number of people. Now, nevertheless, some people have a chumrah to get special for Pesach, but it's not a chumrah that has any tam at all. It has
well,
no,
from the butcher shop, they could be...
I'm not talking about from butcher shop, I'm talking about packaged.
Huh.
Talking about packaged. Butcher shop, so you have to know. If the fellow tells you it's kosher, somebody called about it. Was it a salmon, I think? So the salmon is a salmon, right? I mean, salmon is a salmon, so call the butcher, bought it in a butcher shop, the butcher, is it chametz? Salmon. Chametz doesn't get near chametz. Doesn't, like, what's the issue? So the only issue could be is the knife. Assuming he uses the knife for the salmon for bread. Maybe that would be an issue. It's hard to imagine. If you're worried about that issue, so just you cut a drop off. The end. So the water should be Pesach. Yeah. I imagine they're more careful, but I'm just, that's them. If you have chicken in your freezer that's packaged and wrapped up, you can use it. You know, wash off the plastic part of the chicken before you use it, but you can use it. It's all kosher, anything that's packaged. Nuts, raw, whole, or chopped, raw, almonds, pine nuts, well, any nuts that you're allowed to eat, assuming it doesn't have any additives, it's all kosher Pesach. Napkins, bags, plates, plastic wrap. So you can see yourself take the list home. Tea bags are almost all kosher Pesach. So all of these things, like, it's not worth. You want to be machmer, it could be machmer, but it's not. Let me tell you something interesting. You know, there's such a thing, and I'm saying this to bring out a point. Matzah shruya, gebrux. So what's gebrux? Gebrux is, of course, when wheat comes in contact with water for 18 minutes, it becomes chametz. That's what the definition of chametz is. Once you bake it, you stop the fermentation process, and it can never become chametz again. So if you have a piece of wheat, and it's wet, and then you throw heat on it to the degree of heat that it has to be, so then it can never become chametz, and you've stopped it in its tracks from continuing its chemical process of becoming chametz. So that's now there's some people have a chumrah, many people, like all the chassidim, have a chumrah to, even after it's a matzah, not to cook that matzah. Don't make knedeluf, don't make matzah brayi, and don't even dip it in wine. Don't let any water. If you're like the Lubavitcher, so they eat in a bag, you know, they keep it away from the table. Very, very worried about this. What are they worried about? They're worried that maybe some flour on the outside, or some flour on the inside, didn't get completely baked, and now you're going to make that wet, and you're going to have chametz on Pesach. So that's called matzah shruya. It's more of a minhag than it is a chumrah. Either you have the minhag, or you don't have the minhag. If you don't have the minhag, don't take it. It's not a minhag you want to take. But why would I say shriyada? Because the minhag is that on the last day of Pesach from Chutzlars, eighth day of Chutzlars, everybody eats matzah shriyada. They knedelach, they eat matzah brayim, they eat everything. Why? Like if you don't hold it, they're not going to eat chametz. So because you have to show and scream out loud, this is just a chumrah, it's just a minhag. Nothing to, not to say that all the people that don't eat matzah shruya, or that do eat matzah shruya are doing something wrong. It's just important to know, it's a chumrah, and that's it.
How do you know if nuts, which is packaged in a regular
nuts could be roasted, and I don't know what they do to those things. And the truth is, I don't know what they do with it because they could be that they use oils and things.
Exactly.
But the nut, it's unprocessed, completely unprocessed nuts. If it's a completely unprocessed nut, then it's much. Just to tell you one more interesting thing, and then we're gonna go. I see. I have a lot of teachers here. I mentioned this Friday night. I don't know if you were here or you're not here. Kidneys, which legumes, which comes from the word katan, little things that grind up and it acts like flour. So we don't eat them. Ashkenazim, we don't eat them. Kidneys, the Mishnah Berurah says, kidneys is only usser if it has, it can't be worse than a piece of wheat. A piece of rice can't be worse than a piece of wheat, which means that a piece of wheat is only you're allowed to eat wheat on Pesach. Matzah. Or you could take a raw piece of meat and eat it. Nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with eating a raw piece of meat. Wheat. It's good. So can you eat a raw piece of rice? Mishnah Berurah says yes. Because you can't say that it's worse than chametz itself. Only if it comes in contact with water is it us? So says the Mishnah Berurah, so says the Rav Shulchan Aruch. It has to be a tafshil of kidney, something which comes in contact with water, and it was used as wheat was used as us. Just like wheat is butcher to eat, rice is butcher to eat. If it doesn't come in contact with water, it's butcher. Now I know people, whenever I say this, people are like, what do you mean? You're going to walk around eating
rice cakes.
So we spoke last week about the B&D rice cakes. And they are very, very careful that the process never comes in contact with any water. So they take rice, and they do it in a way that nothing comes in contact, take straight out of the bag, put it into a puffer, like Rice Krispies, and they put it into a puffer, and then they have some kind of a thing that glues it together. I hope it's, okay. But it sticks together, like the gluten of it or something.
Like popcorn.
Popcorn. If you have a popcorn machine where it's not coming in contact with oil, it's just hot air. So you're taking corn, and I want to make here a popcorn party on Chol HaMoed, because why not take, if you can get kosher l'Pesach, a piyas svardim, kosher l'Pesach corn, and you know somehow that it never came in contact with water.
Or oil. It does come in contact with oil.
Not always, no. Not always, you can get the dozen. You put it into, just theoretically, if you put it into a hot air machine and it's just puffing up, there's nothing wrong with eating corn on Pesach. It's only the water which makes it usher. So most people are not going to eat raw corn. You're going to cook it in water. That makes it usher. So what makes any of these things, popcorn, rice cakes, what makes them usher is the fact that you're adding water to it and the water is not afraid to mix. This is a Rav Shulchan Aruch. He can't say, it's ridiculous to say, that kidney is more machmir than chametz itself. Because it doesn't have any logic to it at all. Yeah.
I don't have a question, but the question is about products. I noticed in my shopping that a lot of men say, kosher l'Pesach, l'olei l'tzi.
Yeah.
L'tzi is kind of
true. Right. It means for Sparta. To make a long story short, yeah.
Okay.
That's what it means. Well, I'm just up after 10, so maybe you can ask me privately. I don't know. Anything, just to begin with one, yeah.
I have two questions about products. Tissues and garbage bags.
Your Both 100% without any extra at all. Anyone?
Tissues?
The what? Sink. Yeah, you can't kosher with that on it. You have to get some kind of chemical, I don't know. Yep. Anticoag. Right.
What about
our cleaning lady sells it or eats it or something? She said, anticoag.
What about quinoa and what about, for example, like rice milk or soy milk? Does that count as like a derivative of
kidneyus? I said last week that kidneyus is a list. There's a list of kidneyus, right. And nobody's allowed to add to the list. Quinoa, which is the correct way to pronounce that, quinoa is not on the list, and therefore it's kosher, period. It's kosher lepesa. Quinoa is kosher lepesa. Those that are machmer, they think, if you want to be machmer on quinoa, so you shouldn't eat potatoes either. It's the same thing. Same thing. There's no. Now the only thing with quinoa, not with potatoes, is apparently it sometimes has wheat. It can have wheat, little grains of wheat mixed into this. I don't see why it would have grains. Maybe they use the same mills or something. So that would mean that with the quinoa, you have to take it on a plate and just look at it and make sure it's all quinoa. Yeah. Make sure that it's all quinoa and it's not something else that's in there. If you see something else in there, so you got to take it out.
Is there a Pesach dish with quinoa?
They have with a heksher, for example, like a Sephardi heksher.
Perfect. Then you know it doesn't have feta. It doesn't have any wheat in it.
And then we talked about like you could use a derivative of kidney oil, like canola oil, for example.
Right.
Does rice milk or soy milk count as like a derivative of kidney oil?
That's a very good question. I don't see why not, but that's a good question. I haven't seen anybody that says it's okay. So
could you repeat that question?
Say that if you can use canola oil, yeah. Let's say, so can you also use rice milk? Good question. Theoretically, yes, it's the same thing as oil, unless there's something about the process that I don't know. Maybe it's not a derivative. Maybe they take rice and they sort of cook it. It's not like oil where you squeeze the olive and you get the oil, or maybe they take the rice, I just don't know. Maybe they take the rice and they cook it, and that's what rice cream milk is. Or soy milk, I just don't know, so I don't want to say what I don't know.
What
but it's a good question.
What about kabun? Kabun cumin?
Yeah.
There was a letter yesterday from Orlando that it's kidney. It was not on the list.
It's not on the list. Orlando has many things that are not on the list that he thinks are kidneys. So if you're a follower of Orlando, so don't
on the other hand, he allows cotton seed oil.
Cumin.
Because I was told for the people in
Paris
that years ago, cumin grows in the same
field as food. No, but that's how Rablando said. Rablando says a min kidney issue. He says min kidney issue. And Ramosha says, which is my Rabbi Ramosha in Halacha, that that it's only the list and any spices, there are no spices that are kidneys. No spices that are kidneys.
Can you get this list?
Of what?
What you're talking about.
You listened to last week's.
I didn't know that last week. I'm sorry. I'm going to give you the
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. A high pleasure. If I can't cover, I don't know how to cover everything, but feel free to call me. Okay.